Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Creative Collaboration Show. Chuck Anderson, I am your host, and this is the show where we help who we call big impact entrepreneurs. In other words, business owners who are trying to make a big positive impact in the world with their products, their services, and everything else that they're creating and bringing into the world. And that is our favorite people to work with. That tends to be a lot of coaches and consultants and book authors and speakers and lots and lots of other types of entrepreneurs. And today's guest also likes to serve that audience, which is why I think I like him so much. And we've both been doing this for, quite a while and have served tens of thousands of people in this industry. So today my guest is Mark Mahwini. Welcome to the show, Mark. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time.
Thank you. I'm on the other coast of Canada, the East Coast, so it's nice to connect with a fellow Canadian.
You know, and I think we're kind of like the bookends of Canada in the coaching industry, right? We've got you on the East, we've got me on the West, and so we'll support the rest in between. I love it. Well, that's just my ego talking. Well, Mark, you know, like I said, you know, we both serve, you know, who we like to call these big impact entrepreneurs, tends to be a lot of coaches. And I know you work specifically with coaches to help them get clients organically without spending money on ads and to really kind of build up their communities and their networks. And I think that pairs really, really well with what we do, you know, so with your Facebook groups and your podcasts and all the things. In fact, I'm going to let you share about all that. I think, Mark, the best thing to start with is tell us a little bit about your story. How did it come to be that you were the authority that you are in the coaching industry?
I always say it's tough to narrow down many years into a 30-second, the Cliff's Notes version, so I'll try to be brief. My background, I actually, right out of university, spent about a decade in real estate, and I built up a large real estate business here in my neck of the woods. And that's all I did for my adult life. And it was, to use a Canadian phrase, hockey stick growth every year. And things were going great until everything went kaboom and collapsed. I had about 100 agents and employees when everything burnt down. So I spent a couple years really not sure what I was going to do next. And that was when I was introduced to coaching. I'd never worked with a coach before in my life. And that probably explains the result from the real estate side of it. You know, it's easier playing Monday morning quarterback. So when I was ready to get back into business, this was early 2014, I said, well, what do I want to do? And coaching really grabbed me because I'd seen, had a front row seat to see what it can do. And I loved the flexibility of being able to work with anyone around the world, which was important for me. I'd always played in my local sandbox and it felt very restrictive. And I said, you know, I'm just going to get started with this. And that was March of 2014. So it's been over 11 years now. And I say some days it feels like 5 years, other days 50 years, but it's been a little over 11.
Wow. Amazing. And, you know, it's funny because I started serving coaches around the same time. And it's definitely a group that they are passionate about helping the world and helping their clients in a positive way. They're not always great marketers. So getting clients and finding people to serve, there's a lot of challenges around that they face, we'll put it that way. But what are you noticing? What are you hearing from the coaching community? I mean, you have almost 30,000 members in your Facebook group, which, by the way, if you're not in his Facebook group, we'll put the links beneath this video. You need to be in there. What are you noticing about the coaching industry from running that group?
Well, I agree with what you said, that a lot of coaches don't like marketing or selling. It makes them feel icky. And unfortunately, it's the nature of the beast. A lot of times when a new coach enters this world, they think they're going to be spending almost all their time coaching, 80% of the time coaching. Then the other 20% is doing a little bit of marketing and some paperwork and stuff, but that's it. In reality, you're spending 80% or more of your time finding clients, and then you're lucky to be coaching 20% of the time. So thank you for the plug for the Facebook group, by the way. If anyone wants to go, it's thecoachingjungle.com with it. So the unfortunate thing with the coaching world, which I've said before, is that if you take two coaches, Coach A, Coach B, and if Coach A is the best coach in the world, brilliant, can knock the socks off anyone, just amazing, but they're a mediocre marketer or at sales, versus Coach B, who's a so-so coach, mediocre coach, but is incredible, excellent marketer in sales. If I had to put my money on A or B, it's going to be B, unfortunately, because A is not going to get enough clients coming through the door to really show them what they can do, and then they're not going to get any repeat business or referrals or anything like that. So perfect world, you'd be good at both, but I'm just saying, if you look at those two, marketing wins the day. And a lot of people are out there selling the sizzle, but then they don't have the steak on the back end. And that's a trouble for Coach B, because they're great at getting people through the door, but then they can't get those kind of results that they promise. And they're not going to be getting repeat business on that end either. So perfect world, you'd be doing both.
Yeah, I definitely. And what I find with coaches is that they're usually very passionate about what they do, very skilled, very gifted. If you were to actually become their client, I think that they could really help in a lot of ways. But like I said, they're not natural marketers at all. And so, you know, talk a little bit about maybe like what it like. We talked about what you're noticing with coaches. What is your biggest, I would say, recommendation for coaches that are, because like you said, there's different, and maybe there's different segments of who you're noticing. Like, what do they really need to do to succeed? And we can unpack that a little bit, but at a high level, what is it that they really need to succeed in the coaching business and in a sustainable way?
Well, there's three questions they have to nail down. And in my experience, most coaches don't have all three. They might have one, maybe two or so, but rarely three. They have to be able to answer, who do you help? How do you help them? So what's your offers there? And then finally, where do you find them? And I know that sounds like common sense, but you know what they say about common sense. There was something I was speaking about just a few days ago on a group coaching call that I run for my program. And I talked a lot about the free/paid line. And what I was telling my people there is that coaches, the free paid line is you need to be very clear when you're starting to charge for stuff and compensated for what you're doing. And unfortunately, most coaches just dump all this free, and they're rarely making any offers. So their free paid line is 90% free or more over that way, when it has to be pulled back closer to the center. So I'm not saying that you don't give value. You want to do that as you're growing your following, and you could go the other way where it's all sell, and that's not good either. So I'm on an email list with a husband and wife team, and their emails are, I say they're like the fast food version of emails, because there's no nutritional value. There's nothing. And it's just pitch, and that's it. With my emails, I've been emailing my list daily for years. I like to give an aha, a lesson, something that rewards them for taking their time to read the email. And then there's a very quick transition to the call to action. Oh, by the way, I go over this in greater detail in module 3 of my Natural Born Coach program, and here's the link. It's something like that. So the free paid line is very important, but most coaches go too far, too much free and not enough paid.
Yeah, I think that we see that a lot. I think it's safe and comfortable to give away the free thing, and it's not that easy to ask for money. Especially when you're a new coach, and or if you've been doing this for a while, to ask for enough money, because, you know, I think charging enough and what your true value is something else that coaches often struggle with. And so I love what you said about, you know, being very clear about your offer and all of that, and give value. Any other mistakes that you're seeing coaches make that really make life difficult for themselves?
Well, they often have either too many offers or they're too fuzzy on their offer. And I'll often, when I'm speaking with a coach, I'll ask them, how do you help people? You know, what's your offer? And they're not sure, or they have to reference their website. They're like, oh, just a second, and they'll pull up their website and all that. And the minute you do that with a prospect, you've lost any chance of making a sale if you don't know what your offers are. A true story, I worked with a coach once, and before our first call, I said, hey, can you send over anything that you have, you know, with what he's been doing so far? Because I want to see what he was up to. And he said, yeah, I'll attach a spreadsheet with my offers. I'm thinking, gee, a spreadsheet, okay, it's fine. There's like 28 offers. And well, this one's one-on-one with one weekly call and email access for 3 months. This one is bi-weekly calls, no email access, but it goes 6 months. This one is this, and I was like, holy jeez. So no wonder he was confused. The prospects were confused, and what's that saying about a confused mind doesn't buy in that case? And what I'm usually doing with my clients, one of the first things is we're getting rid of all the junk and making just a really clear offer or a few offers that they can focus on. And I think this will come up later when we talk about books. Spoiler alert, McDonald's. McDonald's fast food franchise, and the same goes with In-N-Out Burger and Five Guys and stuff, got their start and did really well because they eliminated all these menu items that were taking extra time and weren't that profitable, and they focused on what was selling. Usually back in the 50s and 60s with those big fast food brands, it would be, or restaurants would be, hamburger, fries, milkshake, or soda, and that's it. You get rid of all the other stuff that's in there, and coaches need to do the same thing too. You would think that more offers would mean more sales if you have a bigger menu, but in reality, it usually means fewer sales.
Yeah, and that has definitely been my experience. And I always say you should have two, maybe three offers, but this isn't a menu, right? It's not like, here's all the 100 things I can do to help you. Pick one. And if you've ever been to a restaurant, to carry on with your analogy, that, you know, it's almost like a book. It's got too many menu items. It's almost impossible to make a decision. And, you know, as opposed to that one, you go there, there's three things on there. Choose one of these three.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories, which illustrates this point, Joe Sugarman, who wrote the book Triggers, told a story about how he was hired by the Swiss Army knife people. They were launching a Swiss Army watch, and they brought him into their headquarters, and they wanted his opinion on the ad campaign they're going to go with. So they had 9 different types of the watches. They had 3 different colors. I think it was like red, camo maybe, and there's another one, black. And so they had 3 different colors, and then they had men's, women's, and children's sizes. So they had 9 in total. And they wanted the ad to have all 9, the magazine ad, all 9 watches, because you have a greater chance of, they thought, making more sales. He disagreed strongly with it. He wanted to run with just the men's black watch, and that's it. And he couldn't get them swung around, so he finally got them a compromise. They agreed to do basically an A-B split test where they would take 50% of their budget and put it towards the 9 watch ad and then 50% towards his single watch ad. And you could probably guess which one smoked the other one. It was the men's black watch pulled significantly higher number of sales. And there's other stories all about The Paradox of Choice. That book, I think, talks about a grocery store which one day had a spice table with just 3 spices, and then the next day had the same table of 28 that people could choose from, and it was something like 10 times the sale with the table with just 3 spices as opposed to 28. So like you said, the menu, if you get looking at it, you're, oh geez, I don't know if I want to pick this one looks okay or whatever, quite often they won't end up buying, and that's not good for the coach.
And honestly, they don't even have to be separate programs. It could just be small, medium, and large of the same work that you do. In fact, we all often talk about specializing in one thing, get known for one thing. What are your thoughts on that? Like, how narrow do you find their niche needs to be?
It's tough because I'm a big fan of niching. However, you could go too far with the niche. So if you say that you're a business coach for left-handed dentists in Boise, Idaho, named Bob, who are going through a divorce and selling their dental practice in the next 6 to 12 months, that's probably a little too niche down. Although there could be a Bob going through that, and hope everything works out for him. But that being said,
yeah, we wish Bob well.
Yes, if Bob's listening to the show. And no offense to people, Boise just pops into my head there as a stand-in city for that fictional little scenario. What I see a lot of coaches doing, and the mistake they make, is they think they have to cast as wide of a net as possible, can't rule out anyone. So they're life coaches who can help you, Chuck, with your finances, money. They can help you with your health, your relationships, this, and this. And not saying that that's not a great goal or that they can't do it, but you're just not going to get people coming in through the door. It's just way too wide with it. So you don't have to have your niche figured out on day one, by the way. You could start with something and then narrow it down or pivot as time goes on. A lot of people, coaches, think that they're married to whichever niche they choose, and they put a lot of pressure on themselves It's a very heavy decision. They're thinking, well, I have to make the right one because I'm doing this for the next 40 years. Or what will people say if I change niches? I know a very successful coach who has told me he's pivoted 4 times. And he said, I'll probably do it again down the road. And hey, that's great. It's your business. Don't worry about all that stuff. You're not getting married here.
Yeah, and I think that any, you know, smart marketer needs to really pay attention to how the market shifts. Just because you chose a niche 10 years ago doesn't mean you leave it cast in stone today. I mean, look at all the things that have changed. AI, for example, has completely changed the way we do things and is continuing to change the way we do things. And I think, you know, that's an example of something we need to pay attention to. And in something that people needed 10 years ago, they might not need as much today. So we have to be smart. We kind of need to shift with it. One of the things, I love what you said about you don't have to figure it out all on day one. I mean, pick a path and go forward. I always tell people, listen to the people who you're attracting through that marketing, whether you're doing webinars or whatever. Ask them questions, find out what their needs are, and then dial in your niche from their feedback. Like, what are they saying that they want? I mean, one of my mentors always said, you know, sell them what they want, give them what they need. And that made life a lot easier for me.
Yeah, it's like Gary Halbert talked about, feed a starving crowd. You figure out what they're hungry for, and then you're feeding it right to them. So there could be something you want to do and you think, oh, this would be a lot of fun or whatever. But if there's no market for it, then that's not the best way to go about it. The flip side is that don't choose something just because you think, oh, this is easy, this way to make money. That's probably not the right way to do it. I had a call once with a coach who was having trouble getting clients. She was an executive coach. And when we connected on Zoom, she did not look like your stereotypical executive coach. I'm thinking of the stock photos. If you punched Googled female executive coach, she was more kind of like a tree hugger, hippie type vibe to her. And so I asked her, I said, can I ask you how you got into this world of executive coaching? And she said, well, paraphrasing, shit, I really don't like people in that world. You know, they're a-holes, but I heard this is the easiest way to make money. And so no wonder there was a block there. Even if she's not verbalizing and if she's thinking in her mind that she hates her target market, they annoy her, then that's going to come through with her marketing and her conversations and so on. So don't choose base just because you think this is the best way for money. And you mentioned AI. I'm seeing this now too, not to knock people who are shifting into the AI niche, but I feel like a lot of people are thinking, oh, this is where the future is going and this is how you got to make money. And then they're going over to it. Well, every year or 2 years, there's a hot trend that you hear about and then it's dead. I'm not saying AI is going to die. I think it's going to stick around. However, there are a lot of people going into that world that probably shouldn't be teaching, coaching on it. It's not their passion.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, AI is very relevant today, but it's a moving target. And we went through this back in 2010 with mobile. We were teaching people how to build websites and they're like, oh, well, we should just build everything for mobile because that's what the future is. And yes, we're on mobile, but we're on multiple devices. And it shifted every single day. Social media, same thing. It's all changing. But at the end of the day, like you said, serve your hungry crowd. And I think the one that you resonate with, don't just pick the one that you think is going to make you a lot of money, but that you really love serving, and then use your gifts to serve them. And I think this is a good segue. I want to talk a little bit about finding clients, because like you said earlier, the 80-20 rule applies here, where most coaches are going to spend about 80% of their time looking for clients until you get to that point where you've got it really figured out and your coaching program is always full. And if that's the case, you're probably not even listening to us right now.
Yeah.
What do you see is the best way for coaches to find clients?
I mean, there's so many ways. Obviously, the work I do is organic, like you mentioned before, so it's not paid, although you could throw fuel on the fire and do paid. I'm not against that. But I find, for example, the lowest hanging fruit would probably be what I'm doing right now, being a guest on podcasts. This is an underutilized thing. And when I say be a guest on podcasts, I don't mean once every 6 months. That's not going to cut it. I recommend for my clients that they're on at least 2 to 4 shows every month just to get that. You need the reps to get better at it, but also to get enough of them there. So when you go on a podcast, usually doesn't cost anything. Or name, message, and offer, if they stumble across it that way, is going to be exposed to a whole bunch of people who didn't know who you were before. And me being a host, I've been on your side. You're coming on my show next. It's a heck of a lot less work going on a show to be interviewed as opposed to being a guest and then having to worry about getting it edited and all the other fun stuff with that. So my recommendations, podcast guesting is a great thing to get started with, but there's hundreds of ways you can find your ideal clients.
Yeah, there really is. I love your podcast suggestion. I'm very pro podcasts. That's why I host three shows. I love being on shows as well. It's a really... something that anyone can do. You do not need to have a budget to do it. In like you said, most cases it's free. Go get yourself out there and get known. I've had people hear a podcast episode I was on 2 years ago, didn't even remember being interviewed on that show. And they said, oh, I heard you on so-and-so's show, and they became a client. And you just never know. And those podcast episodes are out there. They're not just one and done. They are, you know, they're in Google, they're in YouTube, they're all over the place, which is wonderful. What's your what is your favorite go-to method? If you were to pick one method, so podcasts we talked about, of course, I'm very biased because I'm very pro affiliate and joint venture. And of course, because that's my specialty and that's my niche. Do you have a favorite in terms of client acquisition?
I mean, email marketing is huge. With email, you own your list. You have a direct line to them. You're going into their inbox with their permission when they opt in. As opposed to social media, where the algorithms could change, something might happen, they go the way of the dodo bird, like MySpace. So who knows? And it's a lot more control. And don't believe people say email's dead, by the way, because I've been hearing that since, God, for years. I started emailing my list daily April of 2016, and I haven't missed a day since then. So I think I'm up over 3,300 days. I wouldn't have done that many emails or that many days, because there's probably 5,000 emails in that time, if it wasn't something that worked. So it takes a little bit of time, and that's where people get frustrated. They're like, well, my email list only has 45 people, and half them are my family. And I say, well, hey, that's great. It gives you a perfect opportunity to get your voice down and get used to it. And then when your list is bigger, there's not going to be as much pressure. If you started today with a list of 10,000 and it gets into your head, oh, geez, what if I say something that's offensive? Will it get canceled? Will a bunch of people unsubscribe? So I'm really big on daily emails and then also taking the filter off when you email and not being too boring. I will occasionally poke the bear to keep it interesting or entertain. I just try not to do corporate type speak, boring stuff, especially now with AI and everything. Information isn't at a premium. People are over flooded with information. If you're expecting them to take even a minute or two of their day to open your email and read it, you better make sure that it's entertaining.
Yeah, you got to capture their attention, and attention is the biggest part of it. And I would say a second thing is how you make them feel, because they'll forget 90% of your tips or your content within 24 hours or less, but they'll remember you and how you made them feel. So if you made them laugh, that's memorable, right? And then they look forward to the, well, what's Mark going to send me tomorrow?
Funny you say that. I have a whole book when it comes to humor. This is one from Dan Kennedy, which not a lot of people know of this book. And I love the title, Make Them Laugh and Take Their Money. So he mentions that in this book is that he gives stats and everything too, but if you can make them laugh, they're much more likely to whip open their wallet and invest in whatever you're selling with it. But most people are afraid to do that. You're on my social media, so you know this. Once a day on my Facebook around supper time, in my part of the world, I'll share a meme. I'll post. And it's usually, it could be a pun, a dad joke type meme. Maybe it's a little bit risque. Sometimes those memes get the most engagement of mine. One I just did recently has up around 30,000 shares now. And I'm like, holy geez. It can be a little discouraging. You do a business post, you get 30, 40 engagements or whatever, and then you'd put up some silly meme and you get 30,000. But it's good also to show your sense of humor there, because you don't want to be all business all the time on social media. People want to do business with real people, not just logos.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and you choose those memes very well. I do look forward to seeing those, Mark, because they're always entertaining, for sure. And that it does help. tell, I mean, in balance, right? You can do the business post, but also do the other posts as well. And it gives people a variety. And to your early point about email, I mean, I used to be a director of marketing for an email list of 2 million people. You can't, I'm telling you right now, you cannot email too often. You really can't. I mean, we know some big list people who are emailing multiple times a day. And most coaches are scared to post, you know, or to email once a week. It's like, even if you're emailing daily, you're not even scratching the surface. People aren't leaving you. They're not hating you. And if you're not emailing daily, you're not doing enough. You know, better figure that bit out.
I have a client and she writes emails every Sunday and they're great emails. She puts a ton of effort into it. You could tell it takes a lot of time. My suggestion to her was instead of doing it just on that one day, the Sunday, because someone could miss it. They're out with the family, they're busy, whatever. Why not split it into 7 different smaller emails? One a day, you have a greater chance of hitting someone that way. Plus, I repackage my email so it goes out to almost 10 different places around the internet. So if someone misses the email, they're going to see it maybe in the Coaching Jungle or somewhere else, Twitter, X, or LinkedIn. Who knows? So there's different ways to do it, but what I would say is just get started with email. If daily scares you, okay, fine. Do 3 times a week, and then you can work your way up. And you're just going to get those reps in. It's like building muscles at the gym. You're building your content creation muscle.
For sure. Well, I want to make sure that we get everything in here before we run out of time. I think first and foremost, Mark, how do people connect with you? Do you have a resource, freebie, or anything like you would like to offer our audience that would be the next step in them connecting with you and learning from you?
Yeah, so earlier I mentioned those 3 questions that coaches have to answer if they want to be successful: who, how, and where. I have a report that answers those. It's a quick 5-minute read, 10 minutes at most, and you can get it at naturalborncoaches.com. So that's also the central hub to check out all the podcasts. We're up to 921 episodes now. Also, I mentioned the Coaching Jungle group, thecoachingjungle.com. We always want good people in there.
Fantastic. Well, I'm in there. I always look forward to it. The posts are great. The community is great. If you'd like to check that out, the links to everything Mark just mentioned are right beneath this video. If you're watching this on, or listening, I should say, on a podcast, just open up your phone and the player that you're on, all the links will be there as well. Now, Mark, this has been amazing. I know we've just scratched the surface. We could probably talk all day about our experiences with the coaching industry and our advice for coaches. Maybe we'll do this again and expand on it. Now, before we kind of wrap things up, I'm a big personal growth, self-development junkie. I've read countless books. I'm always listening to audiobooks, reading books to help me in my business and myself. So I always like to ask guests while they're here if they have a favorite or a go-to or a must-read book recommendation. And I know it's hard because there's literally unlimited books, but if you had one that you could recommend, which one would you recommend?
Well, I'd like to give one that hasn't been mentioned before, not to knock Think and Grow Rich or How to Win Friends and Influence People, but those are common ones that a lot of people know about. The one I'm reading now, which I teased earlier and I think is great, is called Behind the Arches, and it's all about McDonald's and how it grew to the global, not just food empire, but also real estate empire around the world. I think there are 40,000 restaurants now. So it's called Behind the Arches, John F. Love. It was first written in the mid-80s, and then I think I have a newer edition, which is mid-90s. Very in-depth, and I will say one of my favorite movies is The Founder with Michael Keaton. I highly recommend it. It's how Ray Kroc grew McDonald's. Don't believe everything in the movie. It's very one-sided to make Kroc look like the Antichrist and the McDonald brothers to be the poor country bumpkins that he stole the idea from. That's not the case, but it's still an excellent movie. I recommend watching it. But yeah, it's called Behind the Arches for the book.
You know, I worked at McDonald's in the 80s, and when Ray owned it and ran it, and he was a man about excellence. He wanted things done, you know, in a very precise way, in a very repeatable way. And McDonald's has gotten so far away from that today. But yeah, no, he was he made some very smart moves. He recognized opportunity. You know, we talk about that hungry crowd. He was a milkshake machine salesman who recognized a good business idea when he saw it.
He was such a stickler for excellence. He wasn't just about selling a franchise and then now let them do their thing. He was very, very tight on stuff. But he and McDonald's changed even the whole beef industry, because before they came along with these hamburger stands and stuff, it's scary to think what people were eating. It was beef with a whole bunch of other crap that was in it and stuff. They would start to do surprise inspections of their beef suppliers to make sure they were up to standards and not trying to play those games. And they would show up at 3 a.m. And if any of those suppliers were messing around, they would lose McDonald's business. And Kroc was really, I know we're at the end of it, but basically he was so tight on principles there and standards that he actually changed the whole beef industry in addition to the restaurant industry.
Definitely a lot of great business lessons that can be learned from studying Ray Kroc and his story. So great book recommendation. I'm going to put that beneath this video and in the podcast show notes as well. Go check it out. I think it's a great recommendation. Mark, this has been amazing. I know we've only scratched the surface. There's so much more we could talk about, but that we'll save that for another day. Any final advice or words of wisdom you want to leave our coaching audience here with today?
I would say this ties into the book theme, less screen time and more book time. So that's something I remind myself. Not saying screen time can't be good, because social media and stuff's important for my business, but you don't want to be on there 24/7. And I would recommend one of my friends and mentors is very big on reading 10 pages a day in the morning. That's what you're doing. You're not reading 100 or 500 pages, 10 pages anyone could do. And that's much better than waking up and scrolling on social media for the first part of your day.
That's great advice. I really like that idea. I'll do that tomorrow morning. I've got some books here that I've been meaning to read, and I'm like, oh, I'll read those eventually. I'll do 10 pages tomorrow. So that's a great, great suggestion. Mark, thank you so much. And to our audience, thank you for your time and your attention. I want this to be worth something here for you today. And so I want you to take an idea that you heard us talk about and take a step towards it today. Maybe there's something you've been planning to do. Maybe there's a phone call or an email you've been putting it off. Take that action today, because when you take action, you get closer to your goal. And if you can't think of anything else, and if you haven't done already, go and join Mark's group. Get the freebie. All those links are beneath this video. Go and do that right now. So remember, on your journey to make a big impact in the world with your coaching business, there's going to be obstacles, there's going to be challenges, but you might just be one resource or one collaboration away from that big breakthrough that gets your coaching business out there in a big, big way in the world. And remember, there's no obstacle too large to solve. The only way to fail is to quit. So keep moving forward. We'll see you here on the next one. Thanks, everybody, and have a great day.